Judge Tolliver?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I'll read the guidelines and standards that the council uses in making any decisions on appeals such as this. All appeals from decisions of the Planning and Zoning Commission shall be on the record only. The council shall act on the record of the hearing before the commission within 120 days from the receipt of the transcript. The council shall not hold an additional public hearing. No appeals to the council shall be based on new or revised subdivision plans that were not presented at the commission prior to the plat being approved or denied, or to appeal a condition imposed by the commission. The council's determination, in accordance with Sussex County Code, the council shall review the record of the hearing before the commission and shall make a determination as to whether a commission's decision was 1, the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence, and 2, involve the proper interpretation and application of the chapter, and 3, the council shall not substitute its own decision for that of the commission. The council's options are: if the council finds that the commission misapplied or misinterpreted the applicable sections of the chapter, or that its findings were not the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and the applicable provisions of the chapter, the council has the following two options. 1, order a new hearing. The council may, in that case, send the matter back to the commission for further review and consideration, and if the council deems it necessary, direct the commission hold a new hearing specifying the time period within which the hearing shall be held and directing the commission to issue its written decision containing findings and conclusions following the rehearing, or 2, reverse the decision. If it finds the commission made an error in its interpretation of the applicable sections of Chapter 99, or if the commission's findings and conclusions were not the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and applicable provisions of Chapter 99, the council may reverse a decision of the commission. The standard of review on appeals: the commission's decision approving or disapproving a plat shall be upheld unless the applicant can demonstrate that, 1, the commission made an error in its interpretation of the applicable sections of the subdivision ordinance, or 2, the commission's findings and conclusions were not the result of an orderly and logical review of the evidence and applicable provisions of the ordinance. So in summary, this is not a public hearing. 2, there is no new evidence or testimony. And 3, the council may not substitute its own decision. It has 3 options only. A, find the commission's decision is supported by the evidence and law, or B, find that the commission's decision is not supported by the evidence and law, and 1, based on that, reverse the decision, or 2, order a new hearing. Thank you, Your Honor.
Just was making sure I had turned off my phone. good morning. I am, and I think I've met everybody here, Charles Tolliver. I'm the hearing officer appointed by the Sussex County Council, member of the Delaware Bar. My role is limited to ruling on should there be any legal questions and procedure. As Mr. Moore indicated, decision on the merits is for the council itself without any input one way or the other from me. The appellant, Stillwater Harbor LLC, represented by Mr. Forreston and Ms. Pete, and the appellee in this case would be Sussex County Planning and Zoning Commission, represented by Mr. Robertson. The hearing is scheduled to last 3 hours. Each side is allocated 45 minutes, and this is a procedure that we have utilized before. Each side will use its discretion as to how they allocate that 45 minutes. Again, as Mr. Moore indicated, the appeal's on the record. There'll be no additional evidence, and the remainder of the hearing, should it be necessary, or to the extent necessary, is reserved for questions from council and any need for breaks or interruptions for technology. In this matter, the record will reflect that pursuant to the schedule that we entered into, Stillwater filed its opening brief on September 29. The Planning and Zoning Commission filed its answer on October the 11th, and Stillwater filed its reply on October 16. The transcripts of the prior hearings before the Planning and Zoning Commission consist of four, one dated April 27, May 11th, June 8th, and June 22nd. Have all been filed in accordance with the requirements of the statute. Notice of appeal was properly filed and docketed. There are, it appears, two issues to be concerned with or council has to address. The first is the contention that no action was taken within the 45-day period set forth in 9 Delaware Code Section 6811, and therefore the plan is deemed should be deemed approved upon demand, which they will posit was made. And second, should the first issue not be persuasive or argument on it, that the plan complies with the code and should have been approved. Again, Mr. Moore has outlined the avenues for relief or of relief that the county council can engage in, and I will not restate that here. And now I believe we are prepared with the president's concurrence, with the presentation by Council for Stillwater.
Green. Good evening. Good morning, members of County Council. I'm used to making evening presentations, but it's nice to actually do this in the morning. Or for those of you who don't know me, my name is Richard Forston, and I'm an attorney with Saul Ewing. I do not, unfortunately, get down to Sussex County as much as I might like. With me is my colleague, Ms. Mackenzie Pete, also with our firm. And also with us is a representative of Stillwater Harbor LLC, the applicant, that's Hal Stewart, and our project engineer, Jim Erickson, is also here. So just very quickly, I'll describe the plan. The Stillwater Harbor residential subdivision, it's 123 residential units on approximately 57 acres for an overall density of just 2 units an acre. The property is actually zoned MR and GR, which is medium residential and general residential. And if we developed this site, I'll say to the max, we could get 4.36 units an acre. Which would be 238 units. So right off the bat, we didn't go anywhere near the maximum density. We're 115 units less than otherwise permitted. This does use the coastal area cluster option. And so as a result, the project actually has 26, almost 27 acres of open space, which is about 47% of the site. The code only requires 30%, so we exceed the open space requirements by more than 50%. This plan was actually submitted before you all adopted the drainage and buffer ordinance in 2022, but nevertheless, this plan does comply with that new ordinance, even though technically it was grandfathered. This property is located in a growth area under your all's comp plan and is located at investment levels, combination of 2 and 3. I'm not really sure why that is, but it straddles the line. If we go to the area map, how do I get back out of this? Oh. this is the area map. You can see the bay here. This is the project. A quarter mile down the road is the Riverdale project community, which is about 405 units. And then there's a other residential units all in the area. This is about a 1 mile radius that you're looking at with the project at the center. So you can see that the area is developing and there's other residential projects in the area. As I say, it is a growth area. Brief history, the plan was first filed in 2021. It went through PLUS. It got comments from the Department of Planning and Zoning. Worked through all the issues that you typically have to work through, and the preliminary plan was then submitted earlier this year to the Planning and Zoning Commission on April 17th. Public hearing was held April 27th. The record was left open at the end of that public hearing for members of the public and the applicant to submit additional follow-up comments. They were due by May 5th, and they were both we submitted post-hearing comments, and there were some letters submitted by opponents. And not surprisingly, I think this happens with every project I've ever been involved in, people show up to complain that once they live in the area, no one else should. So there was public opposition to this project. One of the other things about this project, and I'm going to talk about it more in a minute, but there's an easement associated with the entrance. If you look at that long finger to the north out of the project, there was some concern about emergency vehicle access in particular. And so our client went out, bought ground that had access to an easement so that the fire company and other emergency service providers could get to the project because, as again, I'm going to talk about in a little bit, there is infrequent flooding along the Harbor Road itself. And so to make sure that there could always be access to the project, our client went and
Robert, can I ask you a quick question? And this may be pretty short. I'm sorry. And I can wait until you get, I think you're probably going to hit these specific points, but I was just for, I'm certain I know exactly where Jackson Drain Lane is and where River Road are, but I was going to just have you, just for clarification, point them out on the map. Do you want to wait until you get to those specific points?
No, I can do that right now. It's fresh in your mind. Let's do it. I'm going to walk over. I'll speak up. All right. So you can see labeled on this aerial photo the words River Road, and there's a road that runs essentially along the river. And you can see all the homes with their docks and piers and whatnot. The main access to the property is off River Road. Right here we have Chief Road and Jackson Drain here then runs into Chief Road. So it's kind of a back way. It would be a back way in or out. There is flooding, infrequent. No real evidence about how long it lasts, but that happens down at this intersection here, and also there's flooding that happens to the west here. I am going to talk more about that issue, but that's the geography. Okay. Mr. Moore has already talked about the standard of review. And so what happened here, and I'm going to go through the Planning Commission's motion in some detail, but before I do that, I just want to quote one of my favorite passages from the Delaware Supreme Court as a land use attorney, because I think it is so important. The Delaware Supreme Court has said, when it comes to subdivision plans and site plans and the like, when people own land zoned for a specific use, they are entitled to rely on the fact that they can implement that use, provided the project complies with all of the specific criteria found in ordinances and subject to reasonable conditions, which the Planning Commission may impose in order to minimize any adverse impact on nearby landowners and residents. To hold otherwise would subject a purchaser of land zoned for a specific use to the future whim or caprice of the commission by clothing it with the ability to impose ad hoc requirements on the use of land not specified anywhere in the ordinances. The result would be the imposition of uncertainty on all landowners respecting whether they can safely rely on the permitted uses conferred on their land under the zoning ordinances. So the Supreme Court has told local jurisdictions that if a plan complies with the specific things set forth in your ordinances, and I mean, this is your zoning code, this is your subdivision code, it sets forth all sorts of criteria for projects. If we comply with the specific criteria, then the plan should be approved, subject to only reasonable conditions that might be imposed. And here, the plan does comply, and I'm going to run through the motion real quickly. I did it in our submission in a little more detail, but I want to hit all the points and really kind of drive this theme home of specific criteria versus ad hoc requirements. So the maker of the motion first said that this project's in an ecologically important area of the county, and so that was one of her reasons for saying the plan should be denied. I would submit that it's in a growth area under the comp plan. It's zoned for medium and general residential uses, and there is no specific criteria that allows the Planning Commission to simply reject a plan because it thinks the property is ecologically important. So right off the bat, the very first reason doesn't comply with the law. The second reason indicated there were several concerns or primary concerns about this application, including the impact of the subdivision on the landscape and surrounding area. And then it talked about river, it said access onto River Road, conditions of that roadway, and emergency access easement. I really don't know how to respond to that in the sense that, again, the maker did not cite any specific criteria with which the plan did not comply. They had several primary concerns. How am I supposed to respond as a property owner and say, okay, you had concerns, here's how I'm addressing them? I responded to those concerns by making sure I comply with the criteria in the code. But I can't have a planning commission simply say, well, we've got concerns about your plan, so we're gonna deny it. That's not what the law provides. That's not fair to property owners. The third reason I would submit is even worse and probably is the most egregious thing that the Planning Commission said, which is that there was a lot of testimony in opposition to this plan. I mean, Hornbook law that public opposition is not a reason to deny a subdivision plan. If it complies, it's entitled to approval, period, end of story. And as I said at the start, I mean, I've yet to be involved in a land use project where there wasn't public opposition. I think 2 years ago, I was down here in front of you for Terrapin Island, and there was quite a crowd. It was pretty big opposing that project, a little infill project, but all the people in all the surrounding areas wanted that project to stay natural. Public opposition, not a reason to deny the plan. And I would also submit that to the extent it's listed as a reason, it may have infected everything else the Planning Commission did. I don't know, but it's just not a reason. Now, reason four says that, and this is a code requirement, it says you have to take access off a road that is 50 feet wide, and the road here is only 46 to 42 feet wide. The problem with that is that it will be 50 feet wide when the final plan is recorded. And why is that? Because as with many plans that get approved, we're going to dedicate frontage along the front of the property to widen the right-of-way. That gets done when the final plan gets recorded and approved. So at most, I would say this is a kind of technical defect that gets corrected. And one of the cases that we cited in our letter basically said, it was from Pennsylvania, but it applies equally to Delaware in the sense that of its logic. A planning commission can't say, oh, wait a minute, here's a little technical defect. We know you can correct it, but we're going to deny you anyway. Where a technical defect can be corrected, the plan should be approved with the condition that you make that correction, right? The land use process, and I would say life in general, is not a game of gotcha. And you can't sit back and just wait for the hearing to be done and said, oh wait, here's a little problem with your plan that nobody pointed out or discussed. We're gonna deny you for that reason. By the way, there is testimony on the record. We did cite it in our letter where our engineer did say that the right-of-way was gonna be expanded along the frontage. So again, that's not a valid reason to deny preliminary plan approval. In order to get final plan approval, that right-of-way will have to be 50 feet wide, and it will be as a result of the dedication.
Your Honor, can I ask a question to that point? Is that okay? Mr. Robertson makes the assertion that Section 99.17B says that the right-of-way obviously has to be 50 feet, and you've acknowledged that. At the time of the application, however, the applicant doesn't have 50 feet. Should we not only consider an application as it's submitted, or should we look into the future as to what the applicant may or may not be able to accomplish in meeting that code requirement?
So two answers to that question. First off, if the rule was the right-of-way had to be 50 feet at the time of application, there's a lot of properties that will never be developed now in Sussex County. Some might say that's good, some might say that's bad. But the way you fix that problem is you make the dedication to DelDOT as part of your actual plan. And that's always been required. The department didn't say to us when they gave us comments, oh, we can't accept your plan because the existing right-of-way is not 50 feet wide. It knew, we knew, DelDOT knows, that we're going to widen that right-of-way to 50 feet along our frontage, which is, and at that point, we'll be taking access onto a road that's 50 feet wide. There's no requirement that the road be 50 feet wide in perpetuity for throughout its length. I mean, that would, again, you'd never get projects approved in Sussex County if the right-of-way had to be 50 feet from start to finish, you know, from point A to point B, which could be many, 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 many miles. Yeah, the requirement is just where I take access, it's 50 feet wide.
It was my understanding from what I read that the right-of-way does not exist today.
It will be the additional 8 feet or so will be created when the plan is recorded. That's how we could deed it to it today, but when the plan is recorded, then the right-of-way gets expanded to 50 feet as part of recording the plan. So that gets addressed. It gets addressed as part of the final plan approval and when the final plan is recorded. At that point, the right-of-way will be 50 feet wide.
So the applicant owns the land that he's going to dedicate to the right-of-way?
Yes, because it's along the front of our property. In other words, the road runs across the front of our property. We own the land that fronts on that road, so we will dedicate an additional, 8 feet, 10 feet, whatever it happens to be needed. So now the right-of-way will be expanded.
So that 50-foot right-of-way will only exist for a couple hundred feet?
Correct, but that's all it has to exist in order to comply with the code. What the opponent was person was complaining about at the public hearing is further down, they say, because nobody knows for sure, that DelDOT is going to require some off-site improvements, which is fine, DelDOT can do that. And they say, you're not going to be able to make those improvements because there won't be enough room in the existing right-of-way down at the next intersection or down wherever you have to do it. That is wholly premature because DelDOT has not told us what off-site improvements are needed. DelDOT has not, and we don't know where they're going to require them, if they'll fit or not. That's part of the final plan approval. So we're going to have to satisfy DelDOT as part of getting our final plan approval and make these off-site improvements. But you don't do that. You don't design that. DelDOT doesn't really tell us what we have to do until we get preliminary plan approval. That's why we do two steps. But that will be addressed, and we will not be able to get final plan approval if we can't satisfy DelDOT on those offsite improvements. So not a reason to deny preliminary plan approval, because to the extent we need the right-of-way to be 50 feet, it will be 50 feet, and that will be shown on the final plan. So that requirement we meet. Can we meet these other requirements that DelDOT might impose for offsites? think so. We wouldn't be this far down the road if we didn't think that was possible. But we'll have to do that in order to get final plan approval. Today, we're only here for preliminary plan approval. So does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay. Thank you. Reason five was, again, there's a section of the subdivision code that says, in looking at plans, you should also just generally consider the following. And there's a laundry list of things. And so that was listed as one of the reasons for denial of the plan, because the maker didn't think we satisfied with these various requirements. And they're not specific criteria, right? And that's why the Delaware Supreme Court in the Ashburn case, the case I read the passage from, says there has to be specific criteria. Because what happened in the Ashburn case was, like Sussex County's code, Kent County subdivision code had kind of a statement of general principles at the beginning of the code. We want good land use planning. It should take into account X. It should take into account Y. You know, take all these different factors into account. And then after that kind of opening statement, it did what your all's code does. It set forth very specific criteria with which you had to comply. And the Planning Commission there said, well, we're going to deny this plan based on these general reasons, you know. And that's why the Delaware Supreme Court was very careful to say, if you're going to deny a plan, it has to be based on specific criteria. Now, you can impose reasonable conditions to minimize impacts and whatnot, but you can only deny a plan based on specific criteria. Otherwise, how is a property owner to know? And at one point, the maker of the motion complained that she didn't think there was enough done to preserve enough trees. We comply with the code, but we still, you're not doing enough. Well, how many trees did she want preserved? One more tree? Another acre of trees? 10 trees? 20 trees? I don't know, but I know that I comply with the code, and telling me that simply, well, we don't like your plan because you're cutting down too many trees in our view, that's not a reason to deny the plan. By the way, on the issue of trees, I love trees, but I will tell you that I'm always reluctant when government tries to tell a property owner you can't cut down trees, and I'm reluctant because they come back. And if you go up to Newcastle County, not that you should, but up on 202, there's a subdivision called Deerhurst. It was built in the 50s. It's a quaint subdivision. It's brick houses, three bedrooms, living room, kitchen, dining room on the first floor with like one-car garages. But you go into that community. I remember going there in the early 90s because I had some friends who lived there. And I was always amazed. How did they fit all these houses in between all of these trees? And these are big trees. It just really amazed me. Well, then, a few years later, I went to a presentation on the history of Concord Pike, Route 202, and they had some pictures of Deerhurst when it was first built. Deerhurst was a farm. It was flat. There were no trees because it had been a farm. But in the approximately 40 years since the community was built, if you drove through it today, you'd think it was in the middle of a forest. So trees come back. Don't tell me I'm cutting down too many trees unless you can cite to a specific code provision that says you're cutting down too many. If I comply with the code, I should be able to be approved. Now, the next reason, reason six, I think, is of all the reasons, I get the concern, but again, I'm going back to my specific criteria point. There was concern about the regional flooding. And we talked about that. I talked about that a little bit. A couple things about that. The fire company is the one who really drew attention to that. We went to PLUS. They didn't recommend anything about this plan when it came to flooding. We got comments from the department. They didn't recommend anything in particular about flooding. And by the way, the code, your all's code, has some very specific requirements about what to do if there's flooding. None of those requirements apply to this project because the flooding is down the road from this project. It doesn't really affect this project directly in that regard. So we comply with the code. But we heard the fire company, and that's why we went out and got the easement that gets us to Jackson Drain, so that there certainly could be emergency access for the vehicles. And I also cited the provision of Delaware law that basically gives emergency providers the right to trespass if they need to in order to respond to an emergency. So any question about the use of that easement and that access road by the fire company has been put to bed, and they withdrew their objection. I mean, they saw what we did. We met with them. We worked with them. And so they were happy about that. By the way, the opponents put in, I thought, a very nasty letter about the president of the fire company, questioning his character, but such is life. Reason seven was off-site road improvements. I talked about that when I was addressing Councilman Schaefer's comments. Again, we're going to have to do off-site improvements. They're going to have to fit in the existing right-of-way. If we can't do what DLDOT requires, then we're not going to get final plan approval. But today, we're here for preliminary approval. There was talk about this easement that I've mentioned and whether it could be used by all of the residents of the community or not. And I will say that Still Harbor has a legal opinion that it can be, but the commission asked to hear from its own attorney about that. He presented to them on June 8th and concluded that it could not be used. We did not get a chance to respond to that. But in any event, as I say, I think Delaware law makes clear that the emergency vehicles can use the easement. That's really why we wanted it and put it in. Reason nine, return to the
Your
issue.
Honor, if he's gonna, before you move, can I ask a question?
Why don't we just note it, and then, because I want him to get the full benefit of his 45
okay,
minutes,
great.
And we can right. address
yes,
him after a break.
Thank you, Your Honor. Real quick, too, on this issue, reason nine was also about flooding, and there were concerns that this project might even make flooding worse. Our engineer testified that this project will reduce the stormwater flow to the area of River Road and Chief Road where the flooding is occurring by 21%. So, and the reason for that is because, you know, modern stormwater management regulations say, you know, you've got to contain storm events on your property and you've got to treat them for both quality and quantity. So, you know, to the extent anybody's fertilizing their yard or something like that, we've got to treat that water and get that out before the water then leaves the site. And we have to be able to manage the stormwater on our property in such a way that it doesn't have any adverse impacts. As it happens, this is a fairly large property. It drains to where that flooding occurs, and there's going to be a 21% reduction. Now, was that enough to end the flooding? I don't know. We didn't go that far. We just know we're going to have a very positive impact on that and presumably the cost. Reason 10, we were told that the project didn't comply with the comprehensive plan. And I will say that struck me as odd because it's in a growth area under the comprehensive plan. And the property complies with the existing zoning and subdivision requirements, and I think I'm entitled as a property owner to believe that your all's zoning and subdivision codes comply with your comp plan. And the comp plan, of course, is an advisory document. It doesn't control. And indeed, there's a case that I cited from Pennsylvania where the issue was actually raised, and the court said, no, the comp plan is just a planning guide. I also cited the Kane case involving a rezoning that you all did where somebody tried to argue the rezoning was not consistent with the comp plan, and they cherry-picked some sentences from here and there in the comp plan and said, see this sentence? See this sentence? And Vice Chancellor Glasscock said, yeah, but what about this sentence and this sentence and this sentence? And he made the point that comprehensive plans are just kind of general guides. They also often have conflicting goals, and it's all about trade-offs. So the reason that the notion that the plan doesn't comply with the comp plan, I don't think that's true anyway, but even if somehow that were accurate, it would not be a reason to deny the plan. Again, no specific criteria. And that gets me to the very last reason, which was duplicative of an earlier reason. The maker went back to the section of the code 99-9C and its general list of things that should be addressed and said that she didn't think that that the plan complied with this general list of items. For example, it says the applicant has not adequately addressed the minimization of tree vegetation. Not really sure how I'm supposed to respond to that requirement. She didn't cite anything in the code. She also said that removal of the forest lands risks increased flooding. That's just not true. As I just mentioned, this plan will actually reduce flooding because it will manage stormwater on site in a way that reduces flooding. So, you know, maybe she forgot that when she made her motion. And again, I get back to the issue of trees. Okay, you say I'm not minimizing cutting down trees, but how many trees should I not be cutting down now? We're preserving 12 acres of trees, by the way. So it's not like we're just clear cutting this site. As I said, we're not maximizing density. So those were the reasons that the Planning Commission gave, and I would submit that none of them are relying on specific criteria that provide a basis for rejecting the plan. And therefore, I would ask that you reverse the Planning Commission simply on the insufficiency of the motion and deem the preliminary plan approved. Now, His Honor also mentioned we had a second argument here. The Delaware Code says that the Planning Commission is supposed to rule on a preliminary plan within 45 days of receiving it. So I mentioned that we submitted the plan on April 17th. The public hearing was held April 27th. And the record was held open till May 5th for folks to submit comments. By the way, the code also says that 45 days can be extended with the agreement of the applicant. So we made a submission on May 5th, a post-hearing submission, and if you want to consider that as the final submission of the plan, then we acquiesced to that because we made that submission. Then the Planning Commission would have had 45 days from May 5th, but they didn't decide until June 22nd, which was outside the 45 days. And so, I mean, the law says what it says. It's clear. It's not ambiguous. Ordinances are supposed to be interpreted in favor of property owners anyway. I mean, again, that's clear law in Delaware. And so our preliminary plan is deemed approved as a result of them having taken too long. That's what the code says. That's what the General Assembly said. And there's case law that we've cited that says you got to follow the procedures and the timelines imposed by the General Assembly. Now, all we're asking for and all we're getting is preliminary plan approval. And so to the extent there are concerns about off-site improvements or other concerns, we still have to come back with final plan approval. And there's a lot more engineering detail and a lot more work that gets done to get final plan approval. But because the Planning Commission took more than 45 days, our plan is deemed approved. And I would submit that it's also approved because the reasons they gave misapplied the law or ignored the evidence. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are you reserving any time for?
I would like to reserve the balance of my time, yes, Your Honor, thank you.
I have a question, if that's okay. Before I get back to the emergency access, when do you submit the clock started ticking? What date as it related to the 45-day period for approval?
So the code says that the clock starts ticking upon the submission of the plan by the applicant. So that would have been April 17th. Then the code says that that time period can be extended with the agreement of the applicant. So nobody, of course, ever really asks, but the record, the public hearing was held 10 days later, right, which would have given the Planning Commission 35 more days to decide the matter. But they said, we're going to hold the record open until May 5th, and we submitted our comment letter, our follow-up letter to the Planning Commission on May 5th. So I would say that you could read our submission on May 5th as an acquiescence to an extension, and the 45-day clock would have started on May 5th. But if you then take 45 days out from May 5th, June 22nd is actually 48 days. It's just outside the 45 days.
So you don't think the 45 days started until the point that all the information was received by the commission? as required?
So the commission asked to hear from its lawyer, and the lawyer, for reasons which I don't know, didn't get back to the commission until June 8th. And I know the planning commission says, well, that's when our 45 days started. But we never agreed to that. You know, at most, we agreed to May 5th. And there's no reason that after hearing from their lawyer on June 8th, they couldn't have voted at that meeting. And then they would have been within 45 days of May 5th. So in the absence of any agreement from the applicant, the 45 days would have started on April 17, right? I'm willing to concede that because we made a post-hearing submission on May 5th, that that's when the 45 days would have started. But ordinarily, you know, if the record hadn't been kept open and we hadn't submitted anything, I would say they have 45 days from April 17. And if we think that's not enough time for the Planning Commission, they could have asked for more time from the applicant and probably would have said yes, but don't know. Of course, the other thing they can do is go to the General Assembly and say, 45 days, guys, come on. That's way too short a time for us. Can you make it 90? Can you make it 120? And there are other states in other jurisdictions that do have longer periods. They do have 90 days or they do have 120 days. The General Assembly here said 45 days. It didn't want applicants left hanging. And I'm troubled by the notion that the Planning Commission could essentially leave the record open forever or until it heard from its lawyer. Because suppose after hearing from their lawyer, they had more questions. You know, I'd like to hear from DENREC. I'd like to hear from DelDOT about their offsite improvements. Let's hear from them. And you know, I don't know if you've ever tried to schedule a meeting with DelDOT. It doesn't happen quickly. And so DelDOT might say, yeah, we can meet with you in July. Or DENREC might say, yeah, we'll get back to you in August. And then you might have that meeting. There might be more questions from the commission. And then the commission might hear back from one of those agencies in September. And then they'll say, okay, now we've got everything we need. So now we'll close the record and now the 45 days starts in the Planning Commission's mind. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's intended. That's why you're supposed to get the agreement from the applicant. That's why that's there in the code. And it just didn't happen here.
Your Honor, I wanted to jump back to the emergency access just quickly, if I could. So Jackson Drain Lane, it looked to me like it's a 12-foot wide unimproved road. And it's a private easement. I think everybody agrees. I've heard your argument as why the applicant has a right to use that. But I just heard something new to me. I think you said that Delaware law gives emergency operations such as EMS and fire the right to use any road, regardless of its ownership. Did I hear you say that?
So what the code provides is that they can trespass, if you will, with immunity. And I cited that provision in our papers. If you just bear with me a moment, I'll find you the language. I think I quoted it in a footnote. I'm sorry, let me just find it real quick. I just cited the code provision. It's 16 Delaware Code, section 6701A, which allows a fire company to trespass as necessary in responding to a fire or other emergency. So even if there was a question about their right to use the lane as a matter of the easement, they have the right under Delaware law to trespass in responding to an emergency. So I think that puts that issue to bed, at least in my mind it does.
Thank you.
So, can I go next?
Sure.
The green extension out there is the easement that you actually own.
That's the land that we bought. so we could get to the lane.
So you actually own that?
Yes, we own that.
You will improve that, but the lane is just a dirt road that's got potholes and mud and everything else, so it's questionable how.
I think it's gravelly, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Okay. And the neighbors are not particularly thrilled about the notion of you planning to trespass at will in the event of emergencies, from what I understand.
Well, again, it only would happen in the event of a flood event, which happens on the chief roadside about maybe 4 to 8 times a year. I mean, so ordinarily, you know, if there was a problem in June, July, August, I mean, other than when there's a nor'easter perhaps, they're not going to be using that. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, we met with the fire company at length. We talked with them at length about this, and this satisfied their concern. So if they had issues about the ability to use that road, I would have thought they would have said something to us.
The residents will not be permitted to use that access.
Well, we think they can, but if they can't, then they won't.
So then they are stranded for potentially extended period of time with no way in or out. Is that accurate?
Don't know. I mean, my understanding is that four-wheel drive vehicles, pickups, Jeeps, and things can get through the flooded area. And so there's not a lot of documentation or evidence about that situation. But
would that be something that might be good to know before you build?
Well, we will certainly, and I think I mentioned this in the letter, and I know I've talked with the client about it. This goes to kind of the reasonable conditions that the Planning Commission can impose. And we will make sure that every resident is aware of the situation. Now, and we'll get them to sign something in writing to that effect, because we're not going to have someone come back to us later and say, oh, you never told us about this. Well, here's the big, bold legal notice that we gave you. We are going to reduce the amount of stormwater by 21% that goes to that area.
That's the other question I have. Since you brought it up, is my understanding is the regulation says no more water shall leave the property after the construction is completed than did prior. So, in essence, there should be no net change, not a reduction.
Because we also have to manage for quality, not just quantity, there is going to be a 21% reduction. I have our engineer here if you want to hear from him directly on this point, but that's what the evidence.
Well, that would exceed what the regulation calls for then. It would have to, because otherwise it should be no net change, essentially.
Well, that's the minimum that the regulation calls for. And because you see there's some wet ponds that we're creating, the blue areas on that plan. So so again, the drainage to the east is going to be reduced by 21%. Once you start making changes, you know.
Well, I understand that's the assertion. I just not clear on.
Well,
we can
work with the Planning Commission. We can work with the Planning Department and are happy to do so in terms of reasonable conditions. The codes, we comply with the specific criteria, and the courts have said the Planning Commission can impose reasonable conditions. If there's a concern that what we're saying isn't true, we'll commit to that in writing so it's crystal clear.
That there would be a 21% reduction? And how in the world would you measure that, and who would monitor that?
Well, that's what I mean, there's so much engineering that goes into a subdivision plan. I mean, they figure out the rain flow, they figure out how deep it is, they figure out where it goes. You can do everything with math. And look, you laugh, but it's true.
Well, I mean, I know you can guess.
I mean, that's I'm not an engineer. I'm not a numbers guy in that regard. That's why I went to law school.
Okay.
But, you know, it's going to be checked out by the Planning Department, and they're going to verify that our plans comply and do what we say they will do.
That's all I had.
What else? Have anything else?
Comment?
Ma'am?
Question. So on the 45 days.
Push your on the 45 days, for the record, you're starting the date as 5/5 through 6/22 is 48. Instead of the 45.
Correct.
And that's okay.
But it could be 46, it could be 50. The General Assembly said 45 days. It didn't say 45 days or if you're close to that. I mean, that's why we have specific criteria. 45 days is a specific criteria. I mean, and I don't necessarily, I would argue I don't necessarily have to set the starting date at May 5th. But because this statute says they have 45 days, and that can be, and 45 days would ordinarily run from when we submitted the plan on April 17, we made our submission. But since we made a post-hearing submission on May 5th, I'm willing to concede, not only in this case, but all cases going forward, that if an applicant submits something after the hearing because the record has been left open, that's the applicant's way of saying, I agree. So we agreed that 45 days started to run on May 5th, because that's when we made our final submission.
5 to 622 is, in fact, 48 days. Okay.
Just for point of clarification. There it goes. 19 years of formal education, and I can't press a button correctly. At the subsequent hearings or meetings, were you or your clients present?
I was not present. I don't know if we watched the meetings or not. The record is, I mean, had been closed at that point. So
being very precise, okay. Were any representatives of your client, your firm, anyone at those meetings or allowed to be at the meeting specifically? You were there on the 27th of April.
Correct.
Were you there on May 11th? I don't mean, I'm just you, I'm just talking about any representative.
I don't know, we were there May 11th. There was a public meeting. I mean, we wanted to see if they were gonna vote or not, even though it wasn't on the agenda.
Were you or a representative of your client there on June 8th?
Yes.
And were you or a representative of your client there on June 22nd?
Yes.
Further, and for the record should reflect, although you've run out of time, I think when the question started you had 9 minutes.
It was 13 minutes, I thought, when
take my nine and be happy.
But that's right, your honor is always correct, isn't that what I'm supposed to say? Thank you.
Would you like to take
I was getting ready to say, because we lost one member, I assume, for reasons of personal convenience. Why don't we take 5 minutes?
Sure, that's fine.
We'll stay in the recess.
No, I can't. It's fine.